faith, love, and hope abide, and the greatest of these is... There you go. One day, when I was maybe 10 years old, I have a very distinct memory. My family and I, we were sitting in church at First Methodist Church in Arlington. I don't remember what was said during the service, but I remember feeling a sort of tenderness in my heart. It's the best way I can describe it. And at the end of worship, the minister said if anybody wanted to join the church, they could come forward during the final hymn. And that's exactly what I did. My parents had no idea. I slipped past my dad, who always sat on the center aisle, just about where Mark Napier is sitting right now. And I headed down to meet the minister in his big black robe. His name was Reverend Jack Payne at the time. I had been taught that God loved me, that God had a plan for my life, and that if you wanted to make God happy, then you needed to make a personal decision and invite Jesus into your heart. Well, I had done that a long time before I joined the church. Still, on that day, it felt like God wanted me to come forward. I was the kind of kid who cared a lot about things like that. I readily lapped up anything they told me about God. The God of my understanding at the time was up there and also somehow in here. God, so I believed, was male. God was in control. God was all-knowing and present everywhere. God loved everyone and wanted everyone to make it to heaven, so he sent Jesus, who was also God, to die on the cross so that I could be saved from my sin. That's another thing. I was also convinced that even at 10 years of age, I was filled with sinfulness. Now, over my lifetime so far, the God of my understanding has evolved. I imagine the same is true for you. I hope the same is true for you. Through the years, for me, God has gotten bigger and more difficult to pin down. I mean, who do I think God is now? Well, theologian Paul Tillich said that God is the ground of all being. I like that. It continues to resonate with me. I suppose now I think of God less as a personal God who obsesses over my every move, and more as a life-giving force that includes everything that is, a divine force of which we are all a part, a force of creativity that happens 24/7 all over the universe. Now, that may sound kind of vague to you. Tell you the truth, it sounds vague to me too, but it's just the best I can do. It's just a lot harder than it used to be for me to get a handle on who or what God is. And it's important to acknowledge that much of what we believe about God is conjecture. Well, I guess you could say it is all conjecture, right? Though some of us have very compelling, maybe mystical experiences of God, our beliefs are formed on the basis of incomplete information. That's why it's called faith. The Apostle Paul said, "For now we see in a mirror dimly." Amen to that, brother. He also went on to say, but one day we shall see face to face. And I hope he's right. For now, we're stuck with understanding God based on who we are and what our lives have been like and what we have been taught. I realize that not every kid thinks about God as much as I did, as much as I still do. I know a great many people who identify as atheists. They say they do not believe in God, but I'm not completely convinced that they don't. I mean, clearly they dislike church, at least what they think church is, because most of them haven't been to a church in quite a long time. And they reject the caricature of God as some kind of white guy up in the sky who makes all the calls for how things go down here. I get that. If that's who God is, then I guess I'm an atheist too. But my sense is that most people leave open, on some level at least, the possibility that there might be some kind of divine presence or essence in the universe. Earlier this year, I read a novel called Here I Am by Jonathan Safran Foer. It's about a Jewish couple. They live in Washington, D.C., and their family sort of falls apart in a moment of crisis. Doesn't that sound uplifting? It actually is a great book. I found it to be full of meaning and humor, as well as angst, which means it's perfect for me. I love angst. But there is one sweet little scene in the book when the father, Jacob, takes his son, Benji, to Marfa, Texas. Benji has this kind of budding curiosity in astronomy. And Jacob is the kind of parent who tries so hard to encourage his son in his new interest that he ends up killing it. But anyway, Jacob takes Benji all the way to Marfa to tour an observatory and to see the stars in the wide open Texas sky. And one night, father and son are sitting on the roof of their Airbnb, and they're looking up at the stars and talking. And the son says, "Hey, Dad, you know, I wonder, why do you think it is that people whisper when they look at stars?" It's a beautiful little scene that gets at some connection between religiosity and the experience of wonder. The awe that happens whenever you observe something that confronts you with a sense of scale and with your own smallness. More and more, I'm beginning to believe that everybody is religious. I know a great many people would disagree with me, but what I'm saying is that we tend to be too vigilant about our terminology and our definitions. There's nobody who is indifferent to the experience of standing right at the edge of the Grand Canyon. Those times when you just naturally fall silent and you feel that sense of the presence of something greater than yourself. Those kinds of moments that call us to think about meaning and purpose, at least by my definition, those moments approach what I call religion. Now, I'm a Christian, though I have no doubt that a great many Christians would not consider me one. Some would place me squarely in the vicinity of Satan himself. I know that because they've told me that. It's true. Though I once did, I no longer believe in a God who somehow magically transcends the material universe. The God of my understanding is not a puppet master holding the strings. God has evolved for me. And for all of history, as we look back on what is known about how humanity has understood and related to God, we see an evolution. God has evolved for humankind. We can't prove the existence of God, but if we keep going back, we can trace the origin and development of religion. We can trace the evolution of how we think about God. And we're going to spend some time doing that over the coming weeks. In this worship series that starts today, we're going to consider, how did we get to where we are today? How have we arrived at our understanding of God? And by we, I mean modern-day progressive Christians in our cultural context, living in the United States. We'll trace our origins by starting in the beginning and considering what we know about how the earliest humans understood and related to God. The earliest humans observed nature around them and speculated that God was the sun that rose in the morning and brought light to the darkness. And then Gradually, people began to try and control the forces that shaped their lives, and many gods emerged. They were polytheistic people. They perceived many gods. Then with Judaism came the shift from polytheism, lots of gods, to monotheism, one God with a capital G who was greater than all the others. Then along came Jesus, the Jew who sought to reform Judaism. Jesus, a compassionate healer and compelling teacher, lived this remarkable life that profoundly impacted those around him. Then after Jesus was crucified, the tradition of Christianity then arose. The early church was built by people like Paul and Peter. And then we'll wrap up the series by considering what might come next. Christianity is in this tremendous state of upheaval. What do you suppose we're becoming? A point of clarification. God has been and is understood in diverse ways by countless communities and individuals over the ages and, of course, today. So the evolution of God that we'll be talking about in this series is not intended to be comprehensive of all religious expression. We'll just be looking at the family tree of Christianity and considering how we got here and why we understand God as we do. As we look back on how God has evolved, it's important to acknowledge two clashes of our context, two interpretive lenses through which we observe anything. First, there is the clash of civilizations. As Americans living today, we are aware of the tension, for example, between the Judeo-Christian West and the Muslim world. It was conspicuously manifested almost exactly 16 years ago on September 11th, 2001, and in many violent events that have come after. Christians, Muslims, and Jews, we all descend from a common spiritual ancestor. We're all children of Abraham. And today, we seek to get a handle on God in the context of what is an unanswered question. Will Abrahamic religions ever be able to get along with each other? That's one example of a struggle played out in the United States as well as around the world. Civilizations, groups of people are clashing. Now, history is full of civilizations who have clashed, and for that matter, of civilizations who have gotten along. But my point is that at almost every turn, religious ideas have played a role in that clash, either by fanning the flames or by dampening them. And whenever that happens, religion itself changes. Understandings of God are impacted by the conflicts between groups of people. The second aspect of note is the much-discussed clash between science and religion. Like the first clash between civilizations, the tension between science and religion has a long and instructive history. The Christian religion, for example, once held a particular scientific worldview. It was assumed that there was a place above the sky, literally a physical place above the sky, where God and his son Jesus lived. And there was a place way down below where the bad guys go. The earth was the center of the universe. Everything revolved around us. Up was up and down was down. But then in the 1500s, Copernicus came along and proved that the sun, not the earth, is the center of our planetary system. And that sounds like old news to us. We've always been taught that the earth revolves around the sun. But Copernicus's discovery in his day created a theological crisis. Uh-oh, where does God reside now? What's on top and what's on bottom is not so clear anymore. I mean, if the earth revolves around the sun and it rotates on its axis, that throws off the whole setup. Where does God live? I mean, Copernicus essentially rendered God homeless. The church pretty much responded by doing what it does so well. It just ignored Copernicus and kept up the theology that had been built on false premises. Probably most of us inherit it to some degree. We still have a vague sense that God is up there. We relate to God up there and are less likely to relate to God right here or right here. Many scientific discoveries have shaken firmly entrenched ideas about God. We think things are one way, and then we find out that we were wrong. I mean, maybe the miracles that happened in the Bible weren't really supernatural. Maybe they had material explanations. When natural disasters happen, most of us say it's not about divine judgment at all, but it's about predictable weather patterns. And human activity probably has a lot to do with it too. Maybe God isn't sitting up there inflicting illness on some and granting good health to others. Maybe how we care for our bodies also comes into play. And some observe these kinds of advancements in understanding and conclude that there is no God. Religion, they think, doesn't hold water. It's only science that can be trusted. The relentless changes in how we understand God become, for some, an indictment of religion. But here's the deal. Religion is not the only thing that has changed relentlessly. Science has too. Science is constantly revising, if not discarding, old theories. And nobody thinks of that as an indictment of science. On the contrary, we think that the ongoing adaptation of science carries us closer to truth. And maybe the same thing is happening in religion. As we bring to our theological inquiry, as we bring to that our intellect, our openness, our willingness to be critical of our tradition, and our willingness to let go of superstition, maybe we will find our way to a truly religious worldview that is able to integrate all that we know about all that is. Maybe the ongoing adaptation of religion is getting us closer to understanding God, closer to truth. Can religions in the modern world reconcile themselves to one another? Can they reconcile themselves to science? That remains to be seen. But we're going to talk about that in the coming weeks. I think of this worship series as sort of telling the story of God. Gather round, children. I've got a story to tell you. Each Sunday we'll build on the one before it. So if you're not able to be in worship on a particular Sunday, you can catch up by listening to the sermon online. Our website includes recordings of all of the sermons. You can even subscribe to the sermon podcast if you want to be super cool. Next week, we will go back to primitive religions, way back. In ancient Babylon, eclipses were attributed to restless and supernatural beings, a thought that probably didn't enter the minds of many of us who viewed the eclipse a few weeks ago, through our glasses, of course. God is still speaking. I believe that. I deeply believe that. Over the next few weeks, I hope that you join me in reflecting on our story of God and engaging in the conversation.